Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. In this podcast, we get to talk with Wayne Halchin, who is touring right now on a lecture tour called the No Blessings Tour. And he talks a little bit, actually quite a bit on this podcast, about the blessings that he had received, specifically when he had fire that was dumped on his head and the consequences that he suffered. Talks a little bit about his tour, and also mainly at the beginning of this podcast, you'll hear Wayne talk quite a bit just about his experience with working on Breaking Magic, the Science of Magic, and how it was pitched to the Discovery Channel and how successful that's been over there. And they've got the second season, which is done, that should be airing sometime in the U.S. Not sure when, but it's apparently aired elsewhere. So anyhow, you'll get to hear all that and more when you hear this episode of The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me Mr. Wayne Halchin. Good evening and good blessings.
It is so great to be here. It's so good to see you again.
And you as well. It's been a long time. When was the last time that you were here in Houston? It seems like it was...
Oh, it was a while ago. It was, I don't know, 2010?
That's about right, I'm thinking, because you were doing this... our Memorial Day party, I think, over to Guy's
house.
Oh,
that's right. I forgot about
Remember?
That. Remember? Yes,
I think you just kind of did a performance. You were just in town visiting for like a day or two, I think, and happened to be here, and all worked out.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, when you lectured before that, I think, that was sometime in the late 2000s. But So tell me, say the tour's been going really great
it's
so far?
It's been fantastic. Yeah. You know, the last couple of years, Fran and I have spent our time mostly overseas.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of touring overseas. We've been in London filming the Discovery Channel show. And so it's a thrill.
That's
for
the Breaking
us.
Magic, yeah, Science exactly. of Magic thing? Okay.
Yeah, the production company that produces that is based out of London. So, you know, most of that production takes place overseas.
Yeah.
So this is such a thrill for us to be able to kind of reconnect with friends that we haven't seen for years.
Yeah, so you've almost been living over there rather than...
Yeah.
Are you still in Chico?
Okay. You know, we travel so much, but both of our families are based in Chico, so it hasn't really made sense for us to move. So
did you meet her? You knew her, like, since you were in school or something?
Yeah, exactly. We started dating. Gosh, it'll be... We've been together for 15 years in December.
I was going to say at least 10. I remember meeting her a long time ago when she was traveling with you way back when. You've been married for how long?
So it'll be... We just passed our seven-year anniversary, so...
Seven-year rich.
Yep.
That's what they call it.
Yep.
It's getting better all the time. I'm sure she's like your best friend,
yes,
like mine,
is.
Too. My wife is great.
So
you say that you've been doing a lot of filming stuff that was over there in London. So not so much of that here. I was surprised. I thought that most of that was going to be here.
You know, no. The production company that produces it is Objective Productions. They produce a lot of magic TV over in the UK. They do all of Darren Brown's stuff.
Oh.
They do Darren Brown's live shows. They do Help My Supply Teachers Magic.
So they like magic and medalists, and so they kind of you don't have to pitch them so hard.
I know, right? Well, they actually have a magic department. Anthony Owen is the head of magic over there.
How awesome is that? Okay.
It's pretty impressive.
Uh-huh.
To have, you know, that kind of a big actual TV production network have a specific magic department. It's you know, I've not heard of that before.
No.
You're
not a magic department. It's kind of like that's not even an afterthought. It's kind of like, what? This, you know, we're not doing a kid's show here.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got a completely different mindset over in the UK, I think, than what we have here for
it's very
our
popular
people.
Over there.
Well, it's just like, you know, the Penn & Teller Foolish show that was so popular over there. It got to be apparently so big that they finally brought it over
that's
here.
That's right. They're airing it here now.
The very same shows that were there. So
exactly.
It's not like new shows.
Right.
You know.
Which is great.
I hope that they're going to be able to do something over here, you know, with it.
I would love that,
Start using, you know, some U.S. magicians. They could use international magicians. But
well,
seems
they have Wizard Wars, which actually, I don't know when this podcast is going to air, but that premieres tonight, I believe.
Is it tonight's Tuesday?
Episode.
Today's the 19th, so
I think so, yeah. And Penn & Teller, of course, are part of that, and they do some of the judging, and so...
That's gone through a lot of iterations, too. So
it
I recall
has,
talking
yeah.
to Rick Lax about that because it was a different kind of judging, and then they brought in Penn & Teller, perhaps you think just because of their name, heavyweight, do you think? Or?
Well, I think so. I don't really know. I'm friends with Justin Flom, who's heavily involved with the show, and I have other friends. Billy Kidd, who's actually one of our...
he was on your show, wasn't he?
She, yes. She's a part of Breaking Magic, the Magic of Science, and she went over to compete on Wizard Wars. I have no idea how she did, but we'll find out. But yeah, I wondered though, you know, when they announced that Penn & Teller were going to be a part of it, if any of that had to do with the success of their show Fool Us Overseas, because it was kind of a, I don't want to say a similar format, but it was Penn & Teller kind of judging acts, and so,
Well, in that case, of course, it was foolish that they were they weren't explaining how it was done, but they said enough to show the magician that they kind of knew how it was done, so you didn't fool them.
Right.
In this case, it's not they're trying to be fooled. It's kind of like, hey, this is a good idea. I understand how it's done, and that is a new idea. I'm assuming that that's what they're
doing.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. I'm really excited to see it because I've seen a few, you know, the few of the clips that they've posted online, but I haven't seen any more than that. So
I've been with you. You know, I talked with Rick Lax a time or two, and he was going to record something on the for the podcast with
me.
And he said, love to talk with you, but he said sci-fi has kind of put a mum order
for
a while.
Sure,
and he said,
sure.
What, well, to wait until this thing gets, it's been green lighted, and then it got halted, and, you know, and then they kind of.
Yeah, and that was interesting, too. And I don't have any inside information or anything, but the way I read that is I think they produced, you know, whatever it was, a pilot or whatever, I think they ended up being much more pleased with it than they were maybe anticipating.
Yeah.
And decided to put it through to a full series, and that's why they decided to kind of wait on that initial thing, and now all of a sudden there's a full series, and I've heard that, that people are really happy with how it's turned out, so.
I'm surprised that Celebra Cadabra, I think it was, remember some years ago, you know, Murray.
Yeah, I do
was
remember
involved,
that.
And
yeah.
David Kaye and a few other guys.
That's right.
I don't remember if Gregory Wilson was involved, but yeah, they had like a celebrity,
sure.
And the magician would teach them, and that was just one season.
Right.
I thought that was going to last. It seemed like a good premise for a reality show kind of a thing, you know.
TV's such a tricky thing. You have no idea what's going to stick and what doesn't.
Tell me about that. I want to talk a little bit about your experience. I mean, like,
It's a whole different world, and it's a whole different skill set, being able to do magic for a camera and on television. It's just a completely different thing than doing magic live for a live audience. And it's tremendously difficult. And I think that's due to the nature of production and the nature of filming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to take a small audience and do some magic for them, you could get a reaction. But as soon as you put a 40-person production crew around them with lights and four or five different cameras and two sound guys, it fundamentally changes how the audience responds to magic.
I have thought that was the case. For an example, when if just me, Scott Wells, was walking down the street in Las Vegas, and I start to do something, and show, hey, you want to see something cool, or see a card trick or whatever, they go, no, or if they do, it's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Right.
But the minute I think that you have a camera over your shoulder, it's
what's
going on? And because they're wanting to make sure that their segment gets shown.
Exactly.
So I don't think that the audience kind of, when you're in a studio audience, that they kind of react the same way. Plus, they probably have somebody come to hype them up a little bit.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing. It kind of goes back and forth, because on the one hand, you do, just having the production crew around creates somewhat of a spectacle. And so you have people who are curious and they want to see what's going on, and you have the people that do want to kind of show off and be on television. But the thing that makes it challenging is when people are under that kind of pressure, when they have the cameras and that kind of awareness that they're being filmed, they don't react to magic the same way. It's more difficult to get the genuine astonishment, the genuine freak out moment, because people are so aware of the fact that they're being filmed. So you have to strike this balance where, as a performer, I have to make the people that I'm performing for feel comfortable. I have to almost bring them into that production world, introduce them to the camera operators, to the sound guy, make them feel comfortable enough that they can relax a little bit and experience the magic. And that's tremendously difficult to do. Especially because on some of the shoots, you're under a major time crunch.
Right.
You're dealing with weather and all kinds of other things that have to do with production.
Lighting.
You know, it's this whole other world that is so, so much more complicated than just a magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these pressures, and oftentimes the crew is stressed out because we're over time or whatever it is. And that can kind of leak into the attitude. And so you have to, be really careful to keep things positive and to make the people you're performing for feel comfortable and feel like they're okay to react to the
magic. And almost forget about the cameras even being there. Ideally, it's kind of like, okay, I'm doing this for you, and then later, where did this camera come from?
Yep.
Or whatever.
And it's something that you never think about, when you're not in production and you're just used to performing magic live, you never think about how much that kind of technology and that process changes.
And I think that's what you have to do. Otherwise, you're just performing on a flat one dimension for an audience that could be out in TV land. You don't need an audience if you're just doing, let's say, a big illusion or something.
Exactly.
So I think that's the difference between close-up and a stand-up where you have interaction with people then as well. I hadn't thought about that. But you can construct the angles for the cameras, and, of course, the editing of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to another issue as to editing. I talked to Banachek about that a lot, and he'd talk about with Chris Angel, where you're going to be having friendlies, you know, different people who don't know how this done, but they might be in a blocking situation, you know,
sure,
for the camera
sure.
or whatever.
Yeah.
And so do you find that, you know, did you have to worry about or, you know?
Well, no, I think we've been really fortunate on Breaking Magic because it's, you know, it's not really a magic show. It's a science demonstration show that's mm-hmm. disguised to look like a magic show.
Yeah, why don't you explain the concept for people who may not have seen this?
So, yeah, I know, and that's one of the things. It's produced by Discovery Networks International, which is the kind of the international arm of Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. So there's some kind of in-house politics with when it gets aired here in the States. But it's
really?
Aired, yeah. It's,
okay.
The second season has aired, I think, pretty much all over the world at this point, except here.
I was going to say, I only remember this first season.
Yeah,
I loved it.
I'm not sure when the second season's going to air here, but...
Okay.
I'm sure I'll get a call from my dad who will see it on TV and say, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
But so the concept is we take science demonstrations that are done, the type of demonstrations that are done in classrooms all over the world, and we'll take them and dress them up into, we'll scale them up so they become larger demonstrations, larger stunts. But then instead of going out in front of an audience and telling them that they're about to watch a science demonstration, we tell them that, you know, we're magicians, and maybe we do a real, you know, magic trick for them beforehand, and then we do this big science thing. We get the same kind of reactions that people get.
So it looks like magic.
Yeah, so it looks like magic. People see these crazy things happening. But then that gives us a basis to talk about the underlying science.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a science show that's dressed up and disguised to look like a magic show.
Yeah, one idea. I remember that thing had to do with oil. It seemed like the oil
or
something.
Yeah, ferrofluid, which is a type of oil that has some iron in it, and
mm-hmm.
so it's magnetic. And yeah, really interesting stuff. It looked like something out of an alien movie.
It did. It's very strange.
Right, but instead of doing that, you know, in a laboratory, in a classroom, we did it in a garage shop
right.
in New York with mechanics.
Very organic, makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So it looked like we just took a bottle of oil and poured it, allowed us to talk about ferrofluid and what it's used for.
So was the intent of this really to be educational?
Yeah.
As well as entertaining, obviously.
Exactly.
But I mean, that's kind of the hook as far as trying to
get... You know, I think, and I don't know, because I didn't... It's not my show. I didn't come up with the concept
for
the show.
I just wonder how it was pitched. That's why.
Right. So from my understanding is Discovery's been really looking for a way to fit a magic show into their brand for a while. They love magic. They love how it plays. But, you know, Discovery has this brand. And so the question always was, well, how do we take a magic show and make it fit what they're doing? And so I think when Objective developed the idea for this science-based show, they were really interested, and it's done really well.
Yeah. Now, how did you get involved with it? I mean, as far as did somebody just call you one day, or did you have a friend who said, hey, I'm doing this also, and want you to come along?
I got an email from Objective Productions when they were getting ready for pre-production, and they asked if I'd be interested, and it turned out that a couple of the people that worked there at Objective were fans of mine and had seen video,
mm-hmm.
You know, different clips of me online doing magic.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, I started filming magic with a camera back with my buddy Dana Hawking back in high school.
I remember.
Yeah, sure.
When you sent that to us.
Yeah.
I still got a copy of that.
Yep, I think it was 17 or 18 when Banachek got in touch. And
you know,
I
when you sent that
video.
To us, then Banachek turned to me and said, this is the kind of video that I want to do. Look at this. I mean, it was fast action. It was, you know, good music.
That's good.
And it was, I mean, he
I'm
just
glad
had
to hear that.
He said, this is the production value of something
right.
that this kid did.
Well, good. We spent a lot of time on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it was really
cool. But yeah,
cool.
So we started filming magic together back in high school,
mm-hmm.
And so at this point, you know, I have more than a decade of, I don't need, let me do the math here for a minute. This is embarrassing. You know, you get so old, you start to forget how
you're
long
what,
it's actually
now?
Been.
You're what, 26
now? No, a little bit older.
Older, okay.
31.
Okay.
31, so.
You look like you're twice.
No, thank you, I'll take that. But so I've been performing magic in front of a camera for many, many years, and
mm-hmm.
that's just something that takes a lot of time and practice to get to be able to perform like I was talking about for the people there who are live, but also make it and communicate that to, you know, to the camera and to the viewers at home.
Now, there are times in which that you have no say-so, no ability
yeah,
over
course,
the camera when
course.
You're going in to, I mean, I remember one time I was doing a morning talk show thing, and I was doing cups and balls, and I didn't talk with the camera. This was like in the early 80s, and I had not talked with the camera operators nor the director or anything beforehand, and the issue was, as I was doing it, that I was entertaining and misdirecting the person because I was looking
right,
in their eyes,
course.
But I had no idea which camera angle was on this because
yep.
I was not watching the monitor. Well, when I watched the tape then later, I mean, you can see my steals, my loads, because the cameras kept on my cups the whole time. time
yep.
as I was moving the balls around. And it's like, oh, well, you know, she was fooled, but the camera wasn't. And
so hard.
Yeah.
And it's tremendously difficult to film magic. You know, it's... And that's why it's such a treat to work with a camera operator who is familiar with some
yeah.
kind of magic.
Yeah.
But most of the time, at least in real production, you don't have that option. You're working with professionals that film all kinds of things, but magic is typically not one of the things that they're used to filming. And so there is kind of an educational period with working with the director and the camera operators where you need to go over what needs to be kind of looked away from when the camera needs to move away, because it's impossible to misdirect the camera.
Right.
So we can misdirect the people there all we want, but the camera, if it's on your cups and balls the mm-hmm. whole time, it's going to see everything.
But if it's going to be in a live situation like that, or you haven't
yeah.
talked with the director,
yeah.
or that for some reason they want to bust you and they're doing it intentionally, that's one thing, versus having a show that you got plenty of time and they're it's supposed to be
it.
A magic
right.
show, and they can edit it the way you want, just like a DVD, basically.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, live TV is a whole another world. I did the Today Show. A year and a half ago, I don't remember when that was, but I went in and I was going to do the coin and soda can,
mm-hmm.
and I had a talk with the producer just before, and he said, "Is there any angle issues?" And I explained that off to my left mm-hmm. Is not a good angle, and what I told him was that I needed to face the hosts as I was doing the trick so they could see it, and if the camera was off to my left, then the camera wouldn't be able to see what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, okay, he understood it. But the real reason is, for those of you that know the coin and soda can, mm-hmm. is there's
which, by the way, is a great trick.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. There's an angle issue
yeah.
off to the left at
right.
the beginning of the routine.
Yes.
So we start the show, we start the interview, and right when I'm about to do the first move... I'm not making this up. Three cameras move in on my left. Just right in the spot. They just wheeled these three massive
yeah.
cameras up. And
okay,
I'm like,
he doesn't want us to go there, so that means we have to go
I
there.
I know, right? And I'm terrified. And we were promoting the very first season of Breaking Magic, so nobody really knew what the show was yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could see the teleprompter right before we went live, and it said, this was Willie Geistline, it said, we have here two hosts of the new Discovery Channel show, Breaking Magic, The Magic of Science, which reveals the secrets of magicians. And right before we went live, I said, no, you can't say that. That's not right. That's not what the show's about. That's not what we're doing. And Willie kind of goes wide-eyed, and they go, you're on.
And his eyes were open when the camera came on.
Yeah, and he ad-libbed it. If you watch the beginning of the segment, he makes up kind of a new intro and skips over that line, and it was great. But that's what was in the back of my head when they moved the cameras up is... Oh my gosh, they thought this was an exposure show.
Mm-hmm.
Are they purposefully trying to, move the cameras into...
Expose this to kind of give you a hype to the show because it's going to be exposing later. Yeah.
So fortunately from my angle, I could see the monitor. I could see it was being broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept an eye on it, and I do the routine, and I'm just watching to see if they cut to that angle, I can just shift my body. But I was so terrified that my hands are shaking.
Mm.
And I'm at this point,
keep it from clicking.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm convinced that I'm making a fool of myself on national television, that I'm shaking so bad, and I'm going to screw it up. I get through the routine, we get through the interview, I get back to the hotel, and this is like 2 hours later. They finally post the clip online, and I go to watch it, and you can't see me shake at all. I mean, if you look really closely, there's a couple spots where you can kind of see it, but in my mind, it was much bigger than it actually was. And that just comes down to the practice. I've done that so many times that my mind was able to freak out over everything else, but muscle memory kind of carried me through it. But yeah, live TV and cameras and angles, it's terrifying.
I've heard that before. I think it was Gene Anderson that said in one of his lectures on Part-Time Professional that... it's important to record everything because
sure.
a lot of times after you finish, think, oh, that was horrible, that they didn't laugh, they didn't applaud the right places, or I messed
right.
up this line or whatever. And then you watch it again and say, no, that was not too bad. And you watch it again and say, no, that was really good. And by a third time, there was nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, it's just that a lot of times when you're in the moment,
yeah.
you're exactly right. You think you're shaking or you said the wrong thing,
yeah.
but what's really going out, is a lot better than what you might think.
And then the other side of that coin is true, too. Oftentimes you think you're doing something and it's great, you think the audience is laughing, and you go back and watch the video and realize it's terrible, and no one laughs.
Crickets chirping, yeah. Yeah, yes. That's right. So in the life situation, I want to get to, obviously, you know, the blessings and the situation that you had.
Sure.
I mean, everyone has asked. I mean, you would never know that. I mean, I'm looking at your face right now that, you know.
I had such a wonderful doctor in the Dominican Republic. I healed very well. And yeah, you'd never know.
You look like you may have had a sunburn or something
almost, you know,
basically. Yeah. So start from the beginning, kind of, you know, I'm sure you've told us a million times.
Yeah.
Maybe even in the lecture, but.
Sure. So, starting in 2010, I would go, myself and a group of people, Danny Garcia, Lee Asher, Aaron Fisher, Armando Lucero, BJ Bueno. There's a whole group of us, Dan White. We would all go out and to the Dominican Republic and do some magic. And BJ's from, he has family from that area, and there's really not much of a magic scene. So we decided, you know what, we're going to go out every year and do some television and do a live show.
Trying to promote magic
in
the area.
Exactly. So this is something we've been doing for a while.
Okay.
And in 2000.
And by showing them some really good magic from you guys, they realize what magic's supposed to look like.
Right.
Yeah,
and we've,
that's cool.
and there's some really talented magicians out there that are starting to kind of become more prominent in the area. And so it's really exciting. It's been exciting to be a part of that. And, a year and a half ago, this was late 2012, we were doing a talk show that was, it was kind of a strange show where the host of the show, I think, believes that he has some sort of real power.
Now, when you say power, you mean a mystical power?
Yeah.
So
it was the kind of show where he would tell people.
He believed in black magic or something?
Well, I don't know exactly what he believed, but he would tell people what their horoscopes were. He would tell people what their futures were going to be.
Like a psychic or whatever. Yeah,
okay. It was kind of along those lines.
Okay.
So we appeared on the program. It was me. My wife was there to translate, and then BJ Bueno was there too. BJ did a piece of magic. I did some magic, and at the end of the program, this wasn't live. We were taping it. He said that he wanted to give me a blessing, and so we said sure.
And you didn't know what it was going to be about.
No, we had no idea. But when you're, you know, when you're, especially when it's a host of a TV show, you put a certain amount of trust.
Of course, you do.
In the person. So he took a handful of liquid, which we later found out is a type of cologne that's used in voodoo cleansings.
Now, did he dip this into a bowl, or he poured out of a bottle?
This was really, and it's kind of hard to talk about because he involved Fran, my wife, and BJ. So he handed the bottle to Fran, and he said, "Pour some in my hands."
Okay.
And so she did. She poured, and he said, mas, more. So she filled his cupped hands with the liquid. And then he turned to BJ and asked him to pick up a lighter that was sitting on the side of the stage and to light it. And I could see BJ go, okay. And he lit it, but it's in the host's hands. Yeah. And it was very, you know, if you take like a shot glass full of high alcohol.
It burns on the top.
Right, it burns on the top. It's a thin blue flame. Yeah. That's exactly what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood there for, you know, 10 seconds.
So it's not going to burn his hand because it's going to be.
It's right on the top. Right. So he, for 5 or 10 seconds, he talked to the camera with this burning. And I was standing right to his left. I was right next to him. And I remember thinking, this is really interesting. I mean, I was genuinely interested. This guy said he's going to do a blessing. He has this kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's, you know, he's holding this liquid that's a little bit on fire. And I was really intrigued, but I wasn't concerned. No part of me thought that it was about to get dangerous. And without warning, he just turned and he dropped the liquid on me. He rubbed it into my face. And it, you know, as the liquid spread, the flame spread, and it just erupted.
And your hair caught fire.
Yeah. My hair, my face, I stepped off the stage.
In your clothing too, or just stayed to you on your head? Maybe
it was my. I was very lucky. I was, you know, when I perform, I typically dress up. I, you know, I have a button up shirt.
Your
I have
best.
A tie, and I was wearing my jacket.
Hmm.
Some of the other people that we perform with out there will perform in t-shirts, and it's very loose clothing. So I was very lucky that I was so buttoned up.
Yeah,
but I experienced. You know, and I'd always heard about this, but to experience it was surreal. I experienced time slowing down. You know, once I realized I was on fire.
I couldn't believe it was happening,
Right. The adrenaline kicks in. Huh. And so everything starts to race. My heart was racing. My mind was racing. And because of that, I remember thinking about the layout of the room. And I remember thinking, all right, I need to step off the stage. And I need to avoid Fran. And I need to go around this way. And then I remember thinking, there's nobody over there. It's a pretty bare studio. It's not like there's anyone standing by. There's no fire extinguishers that I didn't have a memory of.
Sure.
You know,
there's so many things going through your mind.
Yeah, all of those. Yeah. Exactly. And I came to the realization that the only way this was going to be put out was if I put it out. And that's where everything from when you're a kid, you know, stop, drop, and roll, all that stuff came back to me. And I reached up and I pulled my jacket over my head.
That's
the
first thing I think.
Yeah, I laid down on the floor, exactly. And I can remember when I could finally...
Now the cameras are still rolling.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I could finally tell that it was out, you know, I pulled my head back and... such a weird thing to describe, but my face came away onto my
jacket.
It was lining. Burned. Yeah, it was burned onto the jacket, so I could feel my face peel away onto the
Christmas.
And I stood up, and I was just I sat, and I was just in shock. I was just it was this surreal calmness that came over me, and I was just like, all right, we need to get to a hospital. And
because you knew the worst of it was over. Now you need
I'm conscious. I kind of, you know, you kind of go through a mental check of, like, I can feel, I'm breathing. I can think. I don't seem to be bleeding. I'm not dead. Okay, we need to get to a hospital.
Yeah.
And we jumped in our car. We had a driver who was driving us to the different talk shows. And one of the crazy things is we're such a large group out there that sometimes we divide and conquer the different TV appearances. We had, I think, 20-some-odd shows that we were scheduled to do over the week.
Mm-hmm.
So for this program, it was me, BJ, and my wife that were supposed to go. Last minute, BJ's uncle decides to come along. He happened to have an iPhone. He was the one... That's where the video came from.
Oh, it was
because,
not, okay.
No, this guy who did it,
him
and his wife own the show. So the studio footage is gone. That disappeared. I'm sure he got rid of that as quick as he could. And then we had our photographer, who's just our press photographer there taking photos for the website and stuff, who happened to be clicking. So we ended up with, you know, a series of great photos and iPhone video of the attack taking place.
Right.
So
which is on YouTube, I guess.
Right, yeah. We ended up driving to the nearest hospital, which was a very kind of scary, rundown hospital.
I wonder what the facilities would be like, you know, is it third world kind of thing, or is it not that bad?
Well, it depends
basically
on what...
triage?
Right, it depends on what part of the, you know, the country and the city you're in.
That makes sense.
And so the first hospital was pretty rundown, it was pretty scary, but fortunately BJ's uncle speaks the language. He's familiar with the country. We took over the hospital. I mean, it was amazing. We walked right in past the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
He got me a wheelchair and wheeled me. We took over a room and he laid me on a table. Mm-hmm. And then BJ's uncle started giving directions to the nurses.
Was he a doctor or something?
No. He had had some experience.
Medical experience?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I remember this time one of the nurses dropped the needle. And picked it up off the floor, and I remember listening to Ozzy saying, "No! You know,
Gee whiz.
But they
were they wearing gloves even?
I don't remember. But they stabilized me and they gave me a couple shots. It didn't feel any better. I was
now they give you shots just in your arm or in your face or
no? Just
okay.
In my arm there. It was just for the pain, but it didn't help at all. It was just excruciating. Burn all over my face. And
it's continued just to burn.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And how long was it from the television studio to the hospital? Like 15 minutes
or
so?
Yeah, 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
So we're there at that first hospital for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and a lot of calls are being made, and we end up getting in touch with a better hospital that had a burn unit and a dermatologist that specialized in this.
Yeah.
So we decide to move over there. And there were no ambulances, so we hopped in a cab. And this was such a surreal... I mean, telling the story is so bizarre because this really happened. So we're in the cab, and the cab driver is just flooring it, trying... You know, I'm in a hospital gown. My face is... Burns develop over time, so it's continuing
to
get...
Yeah, because you continue to burn inside your
skin.
Yeah, so even though you can't see it. Yeah.
It's continuing to get worse and worse and to really develop. And we run out of gas.
Oh, perfect.
So we coast into a gas station, and the cab driver gets out, and he's just filling up gas. And it's just
now,
like...
Why didn't BJ's dad give you a ride from the hospital? I mean, he's the one who drove you there.
No, we didn't have a car. Well, okay, so we had our car. We had a hired driver who had left to go. I think he went
after he dropped you off.
Yeah, after he dropped us off, he went to pick up, I think it was BJ's mom and some other members of our team who were still back at the hotel.
Gotcha.
And to bring them over to meet us. So he was gone.
That's why he had to have the
cab. Yeah,
so the cab just take his time.
Yeah.
Check your oil.
But It was such a strange, surreal thing to be, you know, flooring it 100 miles an hour as fast as we can go, and then to coast in and just everything just stop for, you know, 3 minutes while we get gas.
Wow.
And then peel out of the gas station again.
Yeah, it's like a pit stop in a NASCAR.
But we get to the second hotel and the second hospital, thank you, that was ended up being the dermatologist that treated me while we were there in the Dominican Republic, and they gave me a shot of morphine, and it was, I mean, that was real magic. It was
instantaneous.
Instant, the pain just disappeared, and I was lucid, I was complete, I didn't feel like I was drugged, I didn't feel drunk, I didn't feel, it was just the pain went away.
But all the while, your face would still be burning, and your skin's still burning, but you don't feel anything, sure.
Right. So, they kind of stabilized me there, and she cleaned the, I have no idea how long I was there at that second hospital, but eventually, they released me back to the hotel, and I went back to the hotel, and then I would go in every day, and then every other day, to meet with her again, and she would, it's really kind of terrible process that prevents the scarring. It's why I look so good. But naturally what happens is the skin wants to scab over.
So they peel it.
Right. So the skin wants to scab over to protect the from infection, but that's what results in scars. So they have to peel that and clean it.
And when they're doing that, do they put something on you and then peel that off? Or
no,
they just kind of just like a scab, peeling off with your fingers?
Tweezers. So I would lay...
Every day,
every other day for a couple hours, I'd lay on the table and she would, with tweezers, peel my
face. And how long were you in the hospital there?
I don't know, because time kind of ran together. It wasn't overnight, so they cleaned me up and, you know, gave me stuff, gave me the creams for the face that I could start putting on it, gave me the antibiotics and all that, and then I had to go back the next day. So I got to go back and sleep at the hotel, and then go back to the hospital the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wrist was turned out to be had the deepest burn, and you can still see I've got a bit of a scar here.
Yeah, a little brownish, but that's not bad.
Yeah,
at all.
It's not bad at all.
Compared to what it could have been,
right?
Sure.
Exactly.
I mean, it could have gone into your
artery. Yeah, it could have been so much worse.
Serious, yeah.
So
you were there at the hospital, came back, and then you spent the night then, or they just treated you and released you every day?
Yeah,
or?
They would treat me and release me every time I went in. So.
Okay. Well, I would think you'd be anxious to get back to the U.S. to some other facility.
Well, we were, but we were also, we had to deal with the, we trusted her, all right, so...
her being the nurse,
the
doctor?
The dermatologist, okay. Yeah, in charge. She very clearly knew what she was doing.
Yeah,
and,
you
remember
her treatment.
Yeah,
you know.
And she took very good care of me.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't concerned about...
did she speak English? A little bit?
A little bit, but, you know, my wife was born in Mexico, and so she speaks fluent, but we were surrounded by family. BJ has family that is from there in the country, and so... you know, communication wasn't an issue. And that was another thing, too. We had such a large group with us that I really felt taken care of. Everybody really... I was surrounded by a lot of good people.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to deal with the legal side of things as well. So, you know, a few days after it happened, we went into the courthouse to record our testimony so we could eventually leave the country. And that's what we were trying to build to, is get to the point where the doctor felt comfortable enough with us leaving and flying back, and our lawyers felt comfortable enough that we had done what we needed to do to lay the groundwork so that we could leave. And that was such a strange...
And we say lawyers. You got lawyers from...
From the Dominican Republic.
Not from the U.S. Okay.
No, it's a whole different system over there. And so, if this had happened here in the States, it would have been... The studio would have been closed off as a crime scene. Photos would have been taken. But 3 days after it happened, he's still doing his show.
Like nothing ever happened.
Like nothing had happened. We had, you know, submitted... the report, we had lawyers, police weren't, they, you know, it's not that they were refusing to arrest him, it's just that there was no interest in taking this any further.
Wow.
So we began to get frustrated. We contacted the U.S. consulate over there, and they basically said that it before they could get involved, it really had to go through, you know, the local channels first. And so they weren't at that point ready to jump in and do anything. And that's when we decided to release the photos and the video. And
publicly.
Yeah. Okay. So we put that out thinking that we could build some international pressure to help, you know, have the authorities there take this seriously. And that's exactly what happened. I think within 36 hours, the Associated Press picked it up. The story spread and we began to make progress. And an arrest warrant was issued for the guy. As soon as it was issued, he left the country.
Wow.
He went to New York And so then we began the process through the U.S. consulate of trying to figure out how we needed to get him, you know, extradited back. Fortunately, we didn't end up needing to go that far. Eventually, he flew back and turned himself in and was arrested and then let out on, I guess, whatever bail or whatever their equivalent of that is over there. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've been building towards a trial. So we are still in the kind of beginning stages.
And that's 2 years ago.
It was about a year and a half. Hmm. And so occasionally we'll hear from our lawyers and kind of get an update, but we're still, they are charging him criminally, and we're kind of building to that.
And in the meantime, is he still operating his television station?
I don't believe so. I believe the show was canceled, but I was told it was canceled, mm-hmm. and that was a year and a half ago, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he's back on TV in some other capacity or what.
Well, they said to look at you right now, you never know that anything happens, so obviously she did a great job with you
she really did.
Over there. And how long of a time was it before you were back to, quote, normal, would you say?
Well, it was a good 4 months. You know, I canceled about 3.5 months worth of shows to heal. And after the first couple of months, it looked like I had a bad sunburn. Mm-hmm. And then that redness kind of slowly faded over time. You can see this kind of brown area on my wrist.
Yeah.
You used to be able to see that here on my thumb and across my knuckles, too. And over the last...
redness across your...
Yeah, a little bit there. But over the last 6 months, that's all continued to just slowly fade and fade and fade.
Any issue with the nerve endings or anything?
No. I'm very lucky. Because it was tingly on my thumb for a while. And so we were a little concerned that maybe something had gotten damaged. But that's completely faded. And so.
Was part of your recovery or the fact that it wasn't as bad as it could have been because of your youth and elasticity of the skin? And
could
they say anything that?
What the doctor said was that I was very lucky that I was so buttoned up, that I was wearing the clothing that I was, and that I put it out as quickly as I did, because it could have been, it just would have continued to burn.
Yeah.
So it would have been, you know, the longer I would have waited, the worse it would have been.
So they didn't try to throw water or anything on you, because I think that would have exacerbated the problem. You know?
No.
So whatever they did, they did the right... did the right thing at the right time and kind of in the right place to get the right person to get that taken care of. Then.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so it could have been much, much worse. Definitely the most surreal thing. And then his whole... I mean, it would be one thing if he had come out and said that he had screwed up, that he didn't intend for that to happen, that, you know, this was a horrific mistake. But the fact that he hasn't... And what he said is that he intended this as a blessing to cure evil spirits or to cleanse evil spirits. And the closest that he's come to saying anything is he said that he didn't intend to burn me that badly.
Wow.
You know, and I just don't know how to take that.
Like he was trying to burn the evil spirits out of you, but maybe not...
I know, right?
Not into a big bonfire on your face, but maybe just a little fire.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know what to take away from
comment.
That.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, his reaction afterwards was so strange. Like, he sent a letter several weeks after it happened that said that he believed... It was very cryptic, and it said things like he believes that the universe does things for positive reasons and that good things will come
as
to me from this. And, you know, it was that kind of very flowery, mystical language... Mm-hmm. It's just surreal. The whole thing has been such a surreal, strange experience.
So his defense might be that he believes that he was giving you a blessing, and he had, and that there, as a result that you have been successful because of the blessing that you had received.
Maybe. Who knows? But then, you know, along those lines, it's a different culture. It's a different...
True.
They have a different attitude over there. And another one of the surreal aspects of the story is... 3 or 4 days after it happened, we went into a courtroom to give our testimony in front of a judge and have that recorded so that they can use that in the trial whenever it happens. And, you know, I'm still, my face is burnt, I'm bandaged, and our lawyer is talking to the judge, and I don't remember exactly what our lawyer says, but he says something along the lines of, this TV host thought he had powers and he tried to do something and it, you know, horrifically injured my client. And the judge interrupted him. And the judge says... My grandmother taught me how to read tea leaves when I was younger, so don't badmouth the
powers,
you know, the powers or whatever.
So he has a belief in powers existing.
And that's the judge, and you know, that was...
So it's a culture.
I remember sitting back and just thinking, wow,
I'm screwed.
You know, I could be. but on the other hand, the people there were outraged. there was so much...
No, you mean the local...
Yeah, the locals. So much love and support from the local population there. They were not happy this happened. People would stop me in the hotel. They would stop me when I would, you know, be getting in and out of the cab on the way to and from the hospital. People would stop and apologize. They were, you know, it was in the newspapers out there, and people were not happy that this had happened in their country. They were horrified by it.
Yeah.
So I did get the sense that while there are certainly, you know, cultural differences, this wasn't something that they viewed as okay or acceptable.
I wonder if he had done something like this before, or were you the first magician?
I don't know. I looked up to, and that's kind of BJ's theory on this, is he thinks that, you know, this guy felt, because we went on the show and we did some magic.
You know,
I did the thread through the eye, but yeah, he felt...
You do thread through the eye, that's kind of weird, that's not...
Right.
That's something that's... He'll pick a card trick, you know. This guy does voodoo.
Yeah. Okay. But BJ thinks that maybe this guy thought he needed to show off, or he needed to kind of demonstrate...
His powers.
And that's an interesting thought, too.
But he probably hadn't done that for anyone else.
Yeah, you know, so after it happened, I looked up and tried to find out what it was he was attempting, and I found that the type of stuff that he used, the cologne, is typically used in voodoo cleansings, and it's done. It's more of, you just spray it around your house, and it's supposed to cleanse evil spirits that way.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find any references of people setting it on fire and throwing it on someone, or I even searched to see if there's a thing where you're supposed to throw it over someone. Like over their head, you know.
Without being lit.
Without being lit, yeah. And I thought, well, maybe he just was trying to do that. But no, I couldn't find any references. So I genuinely don't know.
I wonder if he'd actually, well, obviously he hadn't tried that on anyone else from before. So,
yeah.
I mean, when he's saying giving a blessing, it sounds like something he just kind of made up on the spot almost.
It could be. I don't know.
If, since it's not something that you would have seen him do before,
right,
on television.
Right.
Or something that you can research and find that actually would be something,
right,
that people would do. So.
Right. And that would be, I mean, that would make it less strange to be able to look at a video or read a description of what it was that he was trying to do and go, okay, he was trying to do that. He just screwed it up.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. So.
Right, right.
I don't know.
Well, so your takeaway from that is, whenever you're on television, to be a little bit more cautious.
No blessings. I don't do blessings anymore.
So
no,
that,
it has changed me in that way. I, you know, was living in a world before where that kind of thing wasn't possible, and I just would trust people,
mm-hmm,
naturally. And it's not that I distrust people, it's that I'm now much more aware of how stupid people can be, and the kind of how insane their decisions,
mm-hmm,
can be sometimes. And so I feel like I'm more aware of that.
More aware and more wary or leery, perhaps,
sure,
of people who might be trying to show,
sure,
you something. Or,
yeah.
Okay. So it has changed your life more than... Well, it hasn't changed too much physically, obviously,
right,
but,
yeah,
but emotionally...
Sure, there are little things, you know. I saw a juggling group,
mm-hmm,
a juggling duo, maybe a year ago, juggling fire in a very small theater, standing very close to the curtain, and they made some, you know, some jokes about it, and they were very talented, they were very good, but it made me deeply uncomfortable, probably more uncomfortable than I would have been beforehand, just seeing how close they were to the curtain. And
right.
I don't have any issue, you know, with fire itself. I'm fine. You know, I use fire in my act. I burn a piece of paper, and I have no problems with that. But when we were filming the second season of Breaking Magic, we did a stunt, and I ended up burning my thumb. It wasn't a bad burn, but it blistered.
Mm-hmm.
And... I kind of had a bit of a meltdown at that. Just seeing my body burnt again brought back all the same feelings.
All those memories, yeah.
Yeah. And so I kind of had to take an afternoon off and get myself together.
I can understand that. You know, I've had arthroscopic knee surgery a couple,
uh-huh,
times. And when I'm watching a football game and guys get tackled or they get hit in the knee, it's like, oh,
sure,
man.
Yeah.
You know, you can almost feel it in your,
right,
knee, you know. And so if you have had an experience of some sort where you have,
yeah,
had a serious injury like you've had,
right,
you know, that you could be much more conscientious, you know, of fire or potential,
yeah,
threat.
It's
of,
an empathy thing. You
it's
know
exactly
what, that,
what it,
yeah,
is, empathy.
And, you know, so many things about this stand out to me. I had this really strange, surreal moment sitting in the hospital waiting. This was maybe a week after it happened, so I was waiting for one of my checkups with the dermatologist to have my,
mm-hmm,
my face peeled.
Peeled.
And sitting in the waiting room also waiting, her turn, was a four-year-old girl that had this horrific burn down her
scalp
side of her
face.
And turned out what she had done, because I asked our doctor about it, what she had done was she had reached up and pulled a pot of boiling soup off the stove and just... And, you know, but her burns were just as bad, if not worse, than mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see other people with those kinds of injuries. And then I got not only... So the, you know, the response from the magic community was tremendous. Just tremendous outpouring of support. Mm-hmm. But it was also... I received a tremendous outpouring of support and love from other burn victims who are not magicians. Mm-hmm. I got emails from people all over the world who would send me their story and photos of their burns.
And sharing all their...
And they would tell me what to expect from the healing process. I mean, it was really incredible. But yeah, when you see someone else who experiences something similar to something you've experienced, it's kind of brings everything back.
Have you thought about, or have you gone to, like, a Shriners burn unit or hospital?
And we have talked about that. Yeah, we've looked into it, and that is something that Fran and I and also the rest of Curiosidadis have talked about being more involved with that and setting up something that allows us to go in and do magic for children mm-hmm. that have experienced.
Because a lot of times if someone has, let's say, a parent that dies from cancer or whatever, uh-huh. happened, or MS or maybe whatever it
right.
is, that, you know, that is kind of their thing. And so I would think that this would be something that you would want to give back. And
absolutely.
Because you have recognized how much pain they're going through.
So we have looked into it. In fact, this started 3 or 4 days after the incident happened. We looked in, because we're all out there as a group. We ended up canceling all of our TV appearances,
sure.
but we were all still out there. So we looked up. There was a burn hospital, a children's burn hospital, not too far from our hotel. And we looked up and made plans to go and do some magic. It ended up falling through because we ended up needing to be in court for most of that, the rest of that week that we were looking at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that we were all very interested in, and I have no doubt that we'll start doing that in the future. Yeah.
Now, will you continue to go back?
I'd like to.
In the future? And
we had to go back.
Promote magic?
Yeah, we had to go back to meet with our lawyers at the beginning of 2013. It was a brief meeting, and we haven't been back since. But I want to. I miss it. We all miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think 4 years in a row we went out there and did magic, and
They're kind of expecting you almost.
Yeah, we do. We have a fan base out there, and we love it. The people out there
started
are great.
The magic clubs, or
I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure. We did. We started meeting up with some of the local magicians, and there's not many, but there are a few. And so we would have invite. You know, any of the local magicians to come out and meet us for dinner or for breakfast, and had a chance to meet several of them. And
did you ever lecture for the group and try to teach them with anything?
No, I don't think there's a big enough of a group out there for that.
I should know, maybe if you give them DVDs and let's say here.
Oh, sure, yeah. We and some of them, a couple of them are like, you know, really talented. Like they've got some serious skills.
Mm.
So yeah, we would kind of session and have dinner and hang out and kind of informally do all that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be something that you're going to continue to do there. What about other places, other countries, other worlds or something? I mean,
sure.
Have you thought about taking this around the world? I mean, is Discovery going to be doing this thing around too?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about the Discovery thing because that's kind of a separate separate thing.
But the thing you're doing with the guys.
Yeah, we have talked about it. And we talked about kind of doing it, you know, we've explored the possibility of doing it throughout Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
But because of what happened, it's kind of put everything on hold right now. And so
you're gonna wait until the lawsuit's over?
Pretty much, yeah. We're gonna wait until the court thing is all settled and hopefully that's sooner rather than later. Although it looks like it's probably gonna be several years more.
Have you thought then about expanding this to beyond close up, that is, of doing something maybe with including illusionists or mentalists or whatever else to go out and
I see no reason why not? I mean, that's our whole thing is just about, you know, spreading wonder and magic. And
I like that.
And, whether it's mentalism or illusions or whatever, it's...
It's all wonder.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've certainly experienced a lot of wonder.
Yeah?
And a lot of things.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Which brings me to kind of the conclusion. You know, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so my question then to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that's important now that you have lived life? What's important to you?
That's easy for me. That's love. And it really is. And that I think that takes on... I think when you're younger, love is kind of a bit of a cliche. But I think, hopefully, the older you get, the more sense that really makes. And so for me, that's what magic's all about, and that's what this community is all about, and mm-hmm. and that's what we should all be working towards.
Yeah. It's not just getting older, it's getting more mature.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can get old, but yeah. maturing is a different thing,
yeah,
you know.
That's
you,
true.
You've matured to, you know, knowing what love is and experience yeah. that. Well, thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
I'm sure everyone else has as well. It's always really good to see you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Wayne.
Pleasure.
That was Wayne Houchin for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. For more content, including pictures of my guest from this podcast, commentary, links, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.